thanks for coming to this presentation at this late date. What I'm going to be talking about here for the next 15 minutes is an ongoing some results that we have from an ongoing quality improvement evaluation, of the quality improvement project in the workers' comp system that's going on out in the state of Washington. And the title here is a little bit presumptuous. One of my colleagues said, "Did the IOM get it right?" But I'll tell you why I have that title, actually. Turns out I think they did get it right. As many of you know, in the it's 01 crossing the quality chasm report, the IOM provided a sort of template or blueprint for improving quality of care. And one of the statements in that report, I excerpted and I show it here on the slide. Quality problems are everywhere, affecting many patients. Between the health care we have and the care we could have lies not just a gap, but a chasm. What's perhaps most disturbing is the absence of real progress toward, and this is my underline, restructuring healthcare systems to address both quality and cost concerns. If we want safer, higher quality, we will need to have redesigned systems of care. And with all due respect to Meredith Rosenthal and Adam Dudley, because I know them both and they do great work, I'm a skeptic that just pay-for-performance is going to get us very far. I think we have to do more than just push around the money a little bit differently to providers. Well, what were the IOM recommendations? Well, one was design more effective organizational support for care processes, create an infrastructure to support evidence-based practice, use IT more effectively, align payment incentives to support quality, and improve workforce training. So, believe it or not, the workers' comp system is probably more screwed up and has worse problems than the general medical care system, in the sense that there's actually a greater misalignment of incentives. Costs are higher than the general medical care system. Quality's poorer. There's probably higher dissatisfaction among patients, employers, and providers. So it's got a lot of problems that I don't have time to go into today, but they're pretty well known. So there's bad news and good news. The bad news is our data, and I think other data show the same thing. Workers who remain on disability and out of work for longer than a couple of months have a greatly reduced chance of returning to meaningful work. Sort of the bad news. The good news, though, is that effective occupational health care can reduce the likelihood of long-term disability. Let me just sort of back up here for just a moment, because I don't have a slide on this. Is anybody familiar with the workers' comp system? Let me give you a 20-second tutorial. So how it works is it's a state-administered system that operates within very broad federal guidelines. It was started in the early 20th century as more workers were getting very seriously injured as the country was becoming industrialized. And the system provides medical care, first-dollar coverage for medical treatment for occupational injury or illness, and if you're off work for more than a couple days, provides wage replacements. So you don't get all of your wages, but depending on the state and so on and so forth, you get a portion of your wages. So there's two parts to the system, one disability payments and one medical payments. These are data from Washington State, and the yellow line shows the sort of gradient of disability, and you can see that line slopes sharply down. This is among people who had some disability. Among all injuries, there were, that curve represents about, 50,000 injured workers or so. And then after about 3 months, it starts flattening out, and then it becomes flat. So you can see if you're on disability longer than a few months, your chances of getting off disability are pretty slim. Probably 15% of the people, give or take, remain on disability and don't return to work. So what we reasoned, if you're going to have an impact, you have to do something in those first few months. And what we tried to do with this quality improvement project is shift that line over to the left and make it lower, if you will. And how did we do that? We did that, among other things, by trying to introduce and getting physicians to adopt occupational health best practices to intervene early. So the project that I'm going to be talking about is called the Occupational Health Services Project. That is a really boring title. That was probably my idea, but it's not very descriptive, but oh well. So this was started in 1998 by the Department of Labor and Industries. The Department of Labor and Industries in Washington runs the workers' comp system. We're one of five state fund-only agencies, so if you don't self-insure, you have to, by law, buy your workers' comp insurance through the state fund. But what that has meant is that we have population-based data on all injuries going back over a decade. So it's a treasure trove of data to do all kinds of evaluation studies, cohort studies, case control studies. And the administrative claims database served as the data source for this study. So this project is really not managed care. There's no restriction on provider choice. Injured workers can go to anybody they want. As I mentioned, injured workers have first dollar coverage for occupational injuries and illnesses and choice of any provider. We established what we called Centers of Occupational Health and Education to provide the organizational support for the quality improvement activities. So what was the system redesigned through the OHS? We had panels of national experts and as well as local physicians that met in Seattle over about a two-month period in late 1999. They developed quality indicators for low back sprain, carpal tunnel syndrome, and extremity fractures. We developed financial incentives related to those quality indicators, so we actually paid physicians more. They were enhanced payments. We didn't have any formula to reward, give a bonus reward at the end of the year. If a physician did one of the quality indicator services, they got paid more. We established community-based pilot centers called the Center for Health and Education to support and direct the quality improvement activities, including mentoring physicians, providing CMEs for community physicians, disseminating treatment guidelines, and identifying and providing care for high-risk cases, as well as doing care coordination. Big problem in the workers' comp system, just like general medical care, is that coordination is horrible. But the difference is the employer is involved in the workers' comp system because the worker has to go back to work, and oftentimes there is very little, if any, communication between the physician and the employer, which hinders prompt return to work. So this is a schematic of it, and what these COHEs did is to recruit community physicians on a voluntary basis for the pilot. A group of us at the University of Washington are doing the evaluation. Two contracts were given, one to Valley General Hospital in Renton, Washington, which is one of the Boeing plants is located down there. It started in July of 2002. They recruited about 130 or 140 physicians now. The other pilot site is in Spokane, Washington, east of the mountains. The institution that got that contract is St. Luke's Rehab Institute. They started a year later, and they recruited over 200 physicians. So the idea was these physicians would practice in their own clinical settings, no change there. But they would be given the organizational support and training from this COHE. Data, we used administrative claims data, supplemented that with two waves of patient surveys. I'm not going to talk about that, as well as provider surveys. So the process and outcome measures were, to what extent did physicians actually adopt these best practices, which were linked to the quality indicators? I'm going to say something about that in just a second. We also then have three outcome measures. One is the incidence of disability, and that's defined as having an injury or an illness that leads to more than 3 days of lost work time. Two is being on time loss or being out of work, receiving wage replacement payments at 365 days after claim receipt. And then the third is disability costs and medical costs. So this is the timeline. I'm not going to take but a second here. We had a baseline year from 01 to 02 in Renton, and then 02 to 03 in Spokane, then an implementation year, and then an outcome year. For quality indicators, we develop what we call both generic and condition-specific quality indicators, but the four generic quality indicators, what I'm going to talk about today, one was submission of the report of accident. Physician in Washington State has to file an initial report. If they don't, the claim doesn't go anywhere, and the worker can still get medical care, but if the claim's denied, they may be on the hook for the bill. Two is provider-employer phone communication, which we wanted to encourage. Three was the use of special activity prescription forms to formalize a treatment and rehab plan. And four was assessment to identify impediments to return to work. Oftentimes, the reason why workers don't go back to work is not because of their injuries, because of other things. And in fact, in Washington State, of people who've been out of work for 6 months on disability, only 7% spend a day in the hospital for their injury. So the people that are out on long-term disability have not suffered crushing injuries. They're people who got poor care for back sprain. They're people who got poor care for carpal tunnel syndrome, and so on and so forth. So we established new fees, as I said, for the above four services. This is a graphic that shows you the increase in the reporting of the accident report within 2 days. The baseline measure was down here at about 8%, and you can see depending on the red line is an ER physician, the yellow is high volume, the green is moderate volume, and the blue is low volume doctors, but certainly above in the neighborhood of 70 to 80% that most of the physicians filed the report within 2 days, a couple years after the start of the project. This is the use of activity prescription forms. Again, you see with some variation, but particularly among the high volume physicians and the emergency room physicians, where a lot of injured workers are initially treated, they used activity prescription forms. And this is the employer phone calls. Not quite as good an outcome here, although the high volume physicians at the end of 03 were contacting the employer more than 60% of the time. So I've got about 5 minutes. Let me just quickly speed through some of these. The question is, what difference does it make if you adopt these best practices? What we did is we developed an index, and we took the physicians participating in the pilot who had treated back sprain. We put them into high adopter versus low adopter groups. The high adopter groups were above the 50th percentile out of two of the three best practices. The lower adopter groups were below the 50th percentile on all three best practices. This is the data from Renton. These are the number of disability days for all cases. You can see the difference is 5 days on average for back sprain claims versus 18. And for those people who had a disability claim, that is they were out of work 3 or more days, the difference is 22 days versus 72 days. Very large difference. And the difference is similar for Spokane. I didn't include that in the interest of time. This shows some of the health services coordination activity. I'm going to skip over it very quickly, but there were roughly 2,027 recorded contacts made by these health services coordinators, and the number of contacts per claim, the median number was 5 contacts. So these health services coordinators mainly were nurses, were doing things that physicians ordinarily would not do, and the absence of these things causes an increase in disability. We ran a number of statistical regression models. I'm not going to talk very much about them. They included logistic models, multiple linear regression models, and linear probability models. We were able to include for a small set of factors, age and sex, type of injury, type of provider, baseline provider costs, industry and firm size. We constructed comparison groups representing all patients who were treated in the target areas by physicians who did not sign up for the pilot. So we had an intervention group and a comparison group, and ran our, you know, the usual set of regression models. These are a summary of the results. The odds ratios for having a time loss case range from 0.75 to 0.80, highly significant in terms of reduced disability days on average. Across all cases, there was about a 5-day reduction in disability days. Among time loss cases that had 3 or more days of time loss, the reduction in disability days on average was about 16 days. Strongest effects were for back sprain, other sprains, and carpal tunnel. The savings were about $401 in Renton per claim. In Spokane, it was about $487. That represents roughly 15% of the baseline comparison group claims. Let me just... older you get, the more you need reading glasses. There's been some debate about, you know, what's the best approach to try and control costs. And as many of you know, what oftentimes is done is some kind of administrative intervention, such as utilization management. We had an opportunity to compare the effect of what's called a retro program. That is a program that's purely administrative and tries to improve the administration and the efficiency of claims management, but doesn't do anything for the delivery system, versus our pilot, which is the Kohi effect. And when you include in the model, about 40% of the claims were from employers who were involved in this retro program. You can see the difference. You do get some effect. These are cost savings, both medical and disability combined. You do get some effect from this purely administrative program, but the effect is much larger if you actually do something to intervene in the healthcare delivery system. Well, does it matter the length of time that people are on disability? We did, as part of our patient surveys, these are long-term surveys that were done 18 months after, and you can see, looking at the difference between those on time loss for less than 30 days, 30 to 90, 90 to 180, and more than 180, this is for the Renton site, it really does make a difference, especially for those people. This is working at time of interview. These are whether or not you were earning, had the same earnings as before your injury, and this is self-reported good recovery status. So the people who were on time loss out here beyond 180 days really did have poorer other outcomes. And you see the same thing for Spokane, although the gradient here is a little bit different. It starts really going down even after 30 days. So being on time loss does make a difference. There are people who think injured workers just kind of malinger. I mean, they, you know, for reasons that I've never quite understood, nobody gets rich on workers' comp. They sit home and they malinger and they do whatever. I think that is the great exception. So some summary points here, improving processes of care and promoting occupational health best practices may improve outcomes and reduce disability for injured workers. The key is providing organizational support on a community-wide basis. I think now people like Meredith Rosenthal would agree with this. In fact, this is what she's saying in her writing. I think our project provides a very small test of the IOM quality improvement model, and my point here is, although it is presumptuous that the IOM really did get it right, I think you do need, it's not sufficient just to pay physicians a little bit more. I do think you have to provide much better organizational support for care. Administrative interventions or pay for performance alone are not likely to engender meaningful improvements in the quality of healthcare. Thanks.
Here I am as the delinquent chair of this, presider of this. I was taking down the medical care booth and I realized, oh my God, the time is so fast. I really apologize. If you guys self-organized better than probably I would have gotten things going. So our next speaker, and have you been taking questions or told me people have gone over the 15 minutes, maybe to the end? Okay, so let's keep moving. We're almost on schedule anyway. So using qualitative methods to validate quantitative outcome conclusions, Adrian Keller et al.